7:48 a.m. Manhattan. The phone rings before the opening bell. The voice on the line is calm, controlled. It does not say numbers. It does not have to. Something is coming. Earnings. A deal. Bad news buried in a boardroom. The kind of information that moves a stock before the public ever hears a word. Inside a quiet office, Raj Rajaratnam listens. He always listens. His hedge fund, Galleon Group, has built a reputation for being early. Not lucky. Early. Trades land hours before announcements. Sometimes minutes. Across corporate America, executives talk too freely. Friends share favors. Consultants hint. Insiders whisper. Billions change hands without alarms going off. At least not at first. But patterns never stay invisible forever. Someone notices, then someone else. While the market chases profit, federal agents chase voices. Calls are logged, timelines are built, every whisper is recorded, and one of the most powerful men on Wall Street has no idea he is already on the line. Chapter 1. The Network. By 2005, Raj Rajaratnam had built something Wall Street respected and feared. Speed, certainty, consistency. His hedge fund, Galleon Group, did not look reckless. The offices were polished, the traders were disciplined, the returns were steady. Year after year, Galleon beat the market by arriving early. Early mattered more than being right. Rajaratnam told investors the edge came from research, not rumors, not luck. Research that went deeper than anyone else was willing to go. Analysts studied balance sheets. Consultants tracked product cycles. Networks of contacts fed perspective. On paper, it sounded clean. In practice, the timing raised eyebrows. Stocks tied to major technology companies surged in Galleon accounts hours before earnings releases. Positions were dumped just ahead of bad news that had not reached the public. Losses were rare. Profits clustered around moments no model could predict. At first, regulators saw noise. Then they saw rhythm. Inside the Securities and Exchange Commission, analysts ran charts comparing trades to announcements. They overlaid dates. They compared peer funds. One fund kept showing up on the right side of the move, again and again. That alone was not a crime. Insider trading cases are hard to prove. People talk, markets move, coincidences happen. Prosecutors need more than suspicious timing. They need intent. They need proof of non-public information changing hands. Rajaratnam understood that better than most. He talked fast, he listened carefully. He rarely wrote anything down. When he spoke to contacts, he avoided specifics. No numbers, no deadlines, no names tied to deals. The conversations were casual, almost boring. How are things looking? Seems like things are lining up. Yeah, I hear it's moving. Each phrase meant something different, depending on who said it. Inside Galleon, phones never stopped ringing. Traders took direction without context. They trusted the source. Rajaratnam trusted the source too. Those sources came from everywhere. Corporate executives who had once worked with him, consultants with access to confidential meetings, analysts who spoke to suppliers, friends of friends who sat in rooms closed to the public. Some of them knew the rules, some pretended not to. None of them thought they were part of a criminal conspiracy. They saw it as networking, information flow, favors repaid, conversations between smart people who all lived in the same world. The problem was scale. This was not one tip, it was not one company. It was dozens of trades tied to multiple firms across industries. Technology, manufacturing, finance. The web kept expanding. By late 2006, the SEC escalated the matter. They referred it to federal prosecutors. The case moved beyond spreadsheets and into strategy rooms. The question was no longer whether something improper might be happening. The question was how to prove it without collapsing the market around it. Wall Street wiretaps were rare, almost unheard of. They were used for mob bosses, drug traffickers, terror cells, not hedge fund managers with billion-dollar portfolios and elite connections. Prosecutors hesitated, judges hesitated, but the data would not go away. The same phones kept appearing near the same trades. The same executives surfaced around the same moments. Analysts inside the government began mapping relationships. Not just transactions. Names formed clusters. Clusters formed patterns. One executive would speak to Rajaratnam. Hours later, Galleon would trade. Days later, the market would react. The defense was always ready. Market chatter, educated guesses, hard work beating lazy competitors. Nothing illegal. Then, investigators noticed something else. Calls often spiked right before major announcements. Not days, not weeks, hours, sometimes minutes. The closer they looked, the less random it felt. The decision point came quietly. In late 2007, federal agents drafted affidavits. They laid out timelines, they argued necessity, they claimed there was no other way to uncover the truth. If the conversations were clean, the recordings would show it. If they were not, the case would finally have teeth. A judge approved the request. Phones went live. From that moment on, every call tied to Rajaratnam was captured. Incoming, outgoing, domestic, international, calls routed through Manhattan offices, calls made from private residences, calls made while traveling. Agents listened in shifts. They logged phrases. They marked timestamps. At first, nothing exploded. The conversations sounded exactly like they were designed to sound. Vague, polite, noncommittal. But patterns began to form inside the recordings too. Certain voices always appeared before profitable trades. Certain calls were followed by immediate instructions to traders. Certain topics never needed clarification. What could not be said out loud was still understood. Investigators matched recordings to trades, trades to announcements, announcements to profits. The case tightened. Still, Rajaratnam remained confident. He had built Galleon on access, on relationships, on being smarter and faster than regulators who were always one step behind. He did not believe they would cross this line. Not on Wall Street. Not with him. Inside his office, the phones kept ringing. The market kept moving. And somewhere in a federal building, agents kept listening, waiting for the moment when the whispers became impossible to explain away. That moment was closer than anyone inside Galleon realized. Chapter 2. On the line. The wiretaps did not deliver a confession. They delivered rhythm. Federal agents listened for weeks before they heard anything that mattered. The calls were cautious, professional, almost dull. But dull did not mean harmless. Patterns began to surface. Certain numbers dialed only at certain times. Certain voices appeared before trades that never missed. Certain calls ended and were followed by orders inside Galleon within minutes. The recordings were logged against market data. Every timestamp was checked. Every trade was mapped. The overlap tightened. Investigators were no longer guessing. They were aligning proof. Rajaratnam spoke often. He spoke fast. He interrupted. He pushed for clarity without asking direct questions. He let others fill the silence. When a contact hesitated, he nudged. When a voice softened, he leaned in. He never asked for earnings numbers. He asked how someone felt about the quarter. He never asked about a deal. He asked if things were on track. To an outsider, it sounded harmless. To prosecutors, it sounded rehearsed. The calls revealed something else too. This was not a single insider breaking rules in isolation. It was a chain. Information moved from boardrooms to consultants to analysts to phones tied directly to trading desks. Some of the people on the line knew exactly what they were doing. Others told themselves stories. They said they were just talking shop. They said everyone did it. They said the rules were vague. None of that mattered once the calls were recorded. As the investigation expanded, agents followed the voices beyond Wall Street. Silicon Valley names appeared. Corporate campuses, conference calls held after hours, international conversations routed through New York switches. The case grew wider and more fragile at the same time. Too aggressive, and it would spook the market. Too slow, and evidence would evaporate. Prosecutors made a strategic move. They targeted the weakest link. One executive was approached quietly, presented with call logs, presented with trade timelines, presented with the reality that cooperation could mean survival. He listened. He asked for time. Then he agreed. The first cooperating witness did not bring fireworks. He brought confirmation. Yes, information was shared. Yes, it was non-public. Yes, it was understood how it would be used. That was enough. Once one insider flipped, others became reachable. Consultants, mid-level executives, people who thought they were too small to matter. Each conversation added context. Each admission closed a gap. The wiretaps were no longer standing alone. They were being explained from the inside. Rajaratnam remained unaware of how exposed the network had become. His confidence did not waver. He continued trading aggressively. He continued taking calls. The profits continued. Inside Galleon, traders executed orders without knowing the source. They trusted the system. They trusted the founder. No one asked questions they did not want answered. Federal agents noticed something else as the weeks passed. The language shifted. Certain phrases disappeared. Others took their place. The network was adapting. That adaptation itself became evidence. People stopped saying certain words. They spoke faster. They cut calls short. Some numbers went silent entirely. Others kept talking. Those were the ones prosecutors watched most closely. By mid-2008, the case was no longer about suspicion. It was about timing. How many arrests could be made at once? Who should be charged first? How to prevent leaks? The recordings were airtight, but insider trading cases are not won on recordings alone. They are won on narrative, on showing cause and effect, on proving that information traveled and trades followed. Prosecutors built timelines that could be understood by jurors who had never owned a stock. Call at 10:15 a.m., trade at 10:32 a.m., public announcement after market close. Again and again, Rajaratnam's defense would be predictable. Coincidence, experience, skill. The recordings cut through that. In one call, a contact hinted at a delay. Minutes later, Galleon sold. In another, a voice suggested things were better than expected. Galleon bought heavily before the announcement. No one said the quiet part out loud. They did not have to. Behind the scenes, pressure mounted. Some insiders panicked. Some tried to clean their phones. Some called lawyers. The network began to crack under its own weight. Prosecutors debated strategy late into the night. They knew this case would change how Wall Street operated. It would test whether white-collar crime could be pursued with the same tools used against organized crime. Wiretaps were controversial. This case would justify them or end them. Rajaratnam still believed the system protected him. He had money, he had lawyers, he had influence. He had never seen anyone taken down like this before. As summer approached, the investigation reached a point of no return. Enough insiders had cooperated, enough recordings had been matched, enough trades had been explained. The decision was made. Arrests would come in waves. The story would break publicly. The whispers would become evidence. Agents prepared warrants. Prosecutors finalized indictments. Rajaratnam continued to take calls, unaware that each one added another layer to a case already sealed. The network that had fed Galleon its edge was now feeding something else. A countdown had begun, and once it ended, there would be no way to put the silence back where it belonged. Chapter 3. The Cost of Knowing. The arrests came fast, not dramatic, precise. Early morning knocks. Manhattan. Suburbs. Corporate campuses that had never seen federal agents in the lobby. Phones buzzed before sunrise as lawyers were called and meetings were canceled without explanation. Rajaratnam was taken into custody and presented before the cameras the same day the case was unsealed. The market opened as usual. Screens glowed green and red. Inside court filings, a different picture emerged. Wiretap charts. Timelines measured in minutes. For the first time, Wall Street heard itself speak. The government did not rely on speculation. It played recordings. Jurors listened to calm voices discussing quarters, expectations, delays. No shouting, no threats, just familiarity, comfort. The prosecution walked them through cause and effect. A call at 9:54 a.m., a trade at 10:12 a.m., a public announcement after the bell. Again and again, the defense pushed back hard. They argued intelligence, experience, industry knowledge. They said executives talk, analysts speculate, markets react. That did not make it a crime. But the recordings told a different story. The pauses mattered. The timing mattered. The repetition mattered. When cooperating witnesses took the stand, the room shifted. They explained the code, how a phrase could replace a number, how tone could signal direction, how silence could mean certainty. They admitted their roles. They admitted their fear. They admitted what the money made them ignore. Rajaratnam watched without reacting. He took notes, spoke quietly with his attorneys. He did not testify. When the verdict came, it was decisive. Guilty on multiple counts. The sentence followed months later. Prison time, financial penalties, the end of a career built on access. But the case did not end with him. Executives lost jobs, careers stalled, reputations evaporated overnight. Funds rewrote compliance manuals, phone policies changed, conversations that once happened casually moved behind legal walls. Wall Street absorbed the shock in public and resisted it in private. Some called the case overdue, others called it excessive. Wiretaps in finance were still controversial, but now they were proven. The tools used against organized crime had cracked open the quiet language of power. Regulators expanded their reach. firms invested in surveillance. Insider trading became riskier, not because people stopped talking, but because they assumed someone might be listening. The culture shifted, not toward honesty, toward caution. Years later, the recordings remain the most unsettling part of the case. Not because of what was said, but because of how ordinary it sounded. No villain speeches, no threats, just people doing business as they understood it. The whispers did not sound criminal. They sounded familiar. That was the lesson prosecutors emphasized. Crime does not always announce itself. Sometimes it blends in. Sometimes it wears a suit and answers calls between meetings. Rajaratnam served his time. Galleon dissolved, new funds took their place, new names rose, new networks formed. The market kept moving, but the line had been drawn. Information had a cost now, and the cost was no longer abstract. For a moment, Wall Street heard the echo of its own voice played back in court, a reminder that every advantage leaves a trace, every whisper can be recorded. The silence that followed was not clean. It was careful, and careful, in that world, was the closest thing to change.